Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for July 22nd, 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey, Elise.
Welcome back.
Hey.
And Ben Philpott from KUT News and the Tribune.
Hello.
And Reeve Hamilton is sitting in for Ross today. Hi, Reeve.
Hello.
Today we're talking about the latest campaign finance numbers, Hispanics and the GOP, Perry and his taxes, and the shakeup among Senate chairmanships. So we'll start with campaign finance with Evan.
So the mid-year campaign finance reports were filed, and news of their contents was released last week. And we know at the very top level that Bill White has more money in the bank than Rick Perry, even though they raised a comparable amount, White a little bit more than Perry during the last reporting period. So the first thing I want to put on the table for all of you to talk about is whether the difference in cash on hand ultimately matters from White's perspective.
It's about $3 million, right?
Which is also the amount that he transferred from his Senate campaign to
right.
his
so
state campaign.
Arguably, you know, Ross pointed out last week, you know, that White had the best campaign finance report since Tony Sanchez, really among the Democratic candidates running against Republican governors who are incumbents.
Faint praise.
Faint praise to say you did just as well as Tony Sanchez. But he's correct in that Sanchez was the last sufficiently funded candidate for governor on the Democratic side. If you went back and looked at where Chris Bell was during a comparable period, where I think Charles Kuffner did this on his blog in the last couple of days, White has, you know, got seven times the amount of money in the bank that Bell did at a comparable period. People ask, does White have enough money? I think the answer is not, does he have a lot of money, but I think that in fact is the case. Does he have enough? And what does enough mean? Does enough mean enough to be competitive? Does enough mean enough to put himself on the air in front of people who don't know him? I'm just curious to know what you all think about that number and whether the number ultimately amounts to anything.
I'm of the school of thought that elections are won or lost based on the fundamentals of the year and not necessarily based on factors like money.
Right.
And, you know, I think those make a difference in the margins. But even if Bill White was as well-funded as, say, Tony Sanchez, he still has an uphill climb because of the math problem that
because
we've talked about here before.
Because of the numbers in the state.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I was talking to a Democratic operative yesterday, and he said, so, you know, what's the skinny on what people are saying about the Bill White numbers? And I said, well, the short answer is Tony Sanchez couldn't win with a lot of money. And he said, well, you know, come on, what does it take for people to have a different view on this, that, you know, he's got more money, he's out fundraising Perry? And I said, well, I guess it's going to take a Democrat winning a statewide race.
But nobody thinks, Reeve, that Perry's not going to have as much money in the end as White, right? Perry will have as much money as he needs.
Yeah, well, I assume he'll be fine. He's done this before.
And he had less money than Sanchez. He had significantly less money than Sanchez.
I think it's
maybe spent twice as much or
if
more.
Not
maybe
more,
three
yes.
times.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was something like 60 to 20.
Right. Yeah.
If that $3 million can make the best statewide ad of all time, then maybe it'll, make
it'll
a
have an impact.
Right? It's a different math problem for Perry. I think he's shown he can win with less because
his
he's already a known quantity.
Well, his name ID is higher. And he's starting out with an advantage in terms of registrations. There are more Republicans. Is this correct that there are more Republicans, I believe? Is that just anecdotal? Right now, party registration among the Republicans is higher than it is among the Democrats?
I've heard that. I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers, so I don't want to. Don't catch me lying.
I guess the bigger issue for me is then what will it take for White's fundraising to be transformational in this race? And maybe the answer is, per Tony Sanchez, there's no way for money to ultimately be enough of an advantage.
Right, maybe you just don't look to your fundraising to be transformational, right?
Look to your candidate.
Right. Look to your campaign. Look to your candidate. I think he's going to – nothing has shown that he's not going to have enough money to deliver his message.
Right.
So then it's whether or not the message connects.
You know what I thought was interesting in those campaign finance reports was how well Strauss was doing and how well some of the Republican challengers were doing. Ross kind of hit that earlier in this week.
Right. There were certain Republican challengers like Stephanie Carter running against Carol Kent and Jason Isaac running against Patrick Rose who were showing more strength. But, you know, Patty Jacobs in the Kleinschmidt race actually was holding her own, a Democratic challenger to a Republican incumbent, held a seat formerly held by Robbie Cook. Kleinschmidt beat a Democrat, Donnie Dibble, the last time. And so now maybe that's a race. I mean, I think a lot of these mid-year reports, which Ross points out, give you a roadmap to which races may be competitive that you didn't assume would be competitive in the fall. But I suspect that a smaller version of what we talked about with White and Perry is going on here, which is all the money in the world won't save a bad candidate, and all the money in the world won't help a candidate who is running in a fundamentally a different district than his or her party. So if you put a Democrat who raises enough money in a solidly Republican district, it just simply may not be enough.
So people like Deanna Maldonado then might be in trouble. And then on the flip side, Linda Harper Brown, who whose district has been changing to become more moderate and more Democratic-leaning,
right,
and then is also facing this whole Linda Harper Benz problem.
Well, they're looking at her as that's like she's the target for the Democrats right now, right? They're going to take – that's the seat they're really putting their efforts into right now.
I'm creaking. Right. Well, your tone of voice was so comforting to me that I was just reclining. but again, that's a case where no amount of money will necessarily save her if the voters perceive this Mercedes-Benz issue. Or...
Well, like Talmadge Heflin, he was in the legislature for, what, 20 years and had a powerful chairmanship, but the demographics just finally caught up with his district and he lost to Vo.
Speaking of demographics, this week the Hispanic Republicans of Texas launched. It's a new PAC that, Ben, is your topic.
Yeah, the group's coming together to try to spend some money in races in Texas, recruit Hispanic candidates, help to spend money training them, getting their shops up and running. They're spending some money on a local race in Austin, Larry Gonzalez up in Diana Maldonado's, current state representative Diana Maldonado in Round Rock, spending money on his campaign. They've only got about $50,000 right now, but they just launched. They're hoping to have a lot more and put it into the races. And one of the things, though, that I thought was very interesting is that they were talking today a lot about how Republican values and Hispanic values match up. This is not a crazy shot in the dark. This is, you know, look, you look through things like pro-life, family, you know, conservative social stances. They all match up. But when asked about the policy problems like immigration, they really just kind of stuttered and stammered and went back to, yes, but we're trying to find good candidates. So they answered the question of how they're going to try to convince Hispanics that they can vote Republican, but they didn't answer the question about how they're going to convince current white Republicans to vote Hispanic.
All right. So after this announcement, I went to see Democratic consultant who also works on Hispanic candidates and Hispanic issues, James Aldrete, and he said the biggest issue is that these Hispanics who consider themselves Republicans don't have a home. You know, they have less of an issue trying to recruit candidates. They have more of an issue trying to find a home in their own party. And because of this immigration issue, because Republicans have been very hardline, especially in the South, have been very hardline about immigration. And he says that not Latinos aren't only ignored, they've been spit upon when it comes to this issue.
Well, it's not just the issue, right? It's also just the Carrillo problem where, you know, everyone, it's widely suspected that David Porter is the Republican nominee for Railroad Commissioner because he has a non-Hispanic sounding last name.
And Victor Carrillo, the incumbent, was beaten in the line often repeated, there's no factual basis for this, right, but a Hispanic Republican can't win a primary and a Hispanic Democrat can't lose one. That's the sort of very basic, stereotypically articulated statement. But, you know, I think you raise a really important point. There are two issues, Ben, I think, that come out of this. One is, how do you persuade Anglos to support Hispanic candidates? The second thing is, how do you persuade Hispanics to support Hispanic Republicans when the Republican Party is more hardline,
right,
to Elise's point, on immigration? How do you persuade Hispanics to support a party where at least some of that party's members are pushing, for instance, the Arizona immigration law?
Well, and the Democrat, and we talked
that's
about this.
That's where the stammering, I think, comes from. Because,
right,
because they recognize that it's very difficult to reconcile the outreach to Hispanics, on the one hand, with the reality of some of the policy positions represented by some people in the Republican Party.
Well, and that's where you get that's where you get the Democrats who will most likely make sure, try to spend this money that we talked about that Bill White has to make every Hispanic in the state believe that Governor Perry is going to bring the Arizona law to Texas.
So that's where the $3 million cash on hand
there you go.
Difference is going to go, Reeve, is to put out the word, you know, don't vote for those.
The new Republican chairman, Steve Munisteri, was at this event as well, and I pulled him aside and asked him about the idea of, you know, what's going to be easier, convincing Hispanics that they can vote Republican or convincing white Republicans that they can vote Hispanic. And he said, you know, he kind of spun away the idea of, you know, the Victor Carrillo and what happened there. It's not really racist. It's just people vote for names they're familiar with, whatever.
Right.
But he did say that one of his office is trying to do is they've hired people to specifically look at Hispanic outreach. They're going to make an effort to try to go to Hispanic meetings, Hispanic chambers of commerce, local, you know, school boards that are heavily Hispanic, you know, and put themselves in a position meeting Hispanics, as he put it, you know, there where they are, not just saying, hey, join us, but going to where they are and trying to get them to.
Well, and in fact, didn't Rick Perry just speak to the National Council of La Raza within the last couple of weeks?
Right.
The Perry campaign has made no secret of its intention to court the Hispanic vote. They want to do as well as George W. Bush did, or better than George W. Bush did in terms of the percentage of the Hispanic vote. But, you know, the Republicans have a similar problem as the Democrats, which is that Hispanic turnout is always an issue.
Right.
And the white campaign understands, back to the math problem, Elise, that the math for Democrats is hard math to make work. It's almost impossible math to make work if South Texas Valley Democrats, Hispanics, do not come to the polls.
And that's, I think that's why you try to make sure that, whether it's true or not, right, that all Hispanics believe, well, Governor Perry might push an immigration
but
bill.
But the Republicans, the efforts on the part of the Hispanic Republicans of Texas to try to turn out Hispanics to support Republicans is frankly as plagued by this problem of turnout. So those right. efforts have to be viewed in context.
But it's sort of the long view, right? I mean, eventually, just the state's going to become more and more Hispanic. You're going to want the community on your side.
Yeah, my feeling
when they do become a major voting bloc.
Right, and my feeling is policy hasn't changed fast enough, and the Republicans have not, you know, the Republican Party in terms of its platform has not embraced comprehensive immigration reform yet because Hispanics aren't voting. So, you know,
the pressure is not on there. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Right. So my topic this week is just the latest shenanigans in the governor's race. And Governor Perry, WFAA, our partners in Dallas.
I think they're a boy, actually.
Our partner station up in Dallas, they did an interesting story at the beginning of this week just about how Perry also has not released his taxes from the time he was in the Texas House.
It was two cycles, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they asked him about it, and he just basically said that he cannot find them. The IRS only keeps records of our taxes for the past 7 years. And so
the Perry campaign has been complaining about White not releasing his taxes for all the years he's been in public life, in quotes, all the while not having released Perry's taxes for all the years he was in public life?
And the governor said, quote, "I was farming and ranching in those years, so there was nothing peculiar." Of course, the question is accountability. You know, if one campaign should release all its taxes for its years in public life,
I imagine that the Perry campaign's position on this is that they'll put them out immediately since they've been haranguing White for the same thing, right?
He said they would release the documents if they found them.
So to release something that's missing.
Oh, well, so there are no records of them, basically.
That's what they're saying. And then also the 2009 taxes.
But he was farming and ranching. What could have,
Perry's 2009 taxes have not been released yet. Have White's?
Yes.
So Perry's 2009 taxes have not yet been released.
At first, he told Channel 8 in Dallas that he suspected he would release the 2009 taxes before Election Day. Then he was asked more specifically, and he said he would absolutely release the 2009 taxes before general election. So, you know, the taxes issue is kind of continuing to be in the forefront just because it looks like Perry has some missing ones too. Of course.
So, do you think they're kicking themselves over there at the Perry camp for sort of setting up this as a taxes as an issue and releasing taxes?
Well, it's been I mean, the thing is, it's been enormously successful for them, regardless of what happens on day 134 or whatever it is.
Right, it's day 134 or
right,
whatever it is.
But the fact is that the Perry campaign has made White. There's no question they've made White taxes a successful issue. They just have.
And now they're saying that thank goodness that we have as many taxes released as have been released, because that's where we found this Frontera profit.
Right, when the Dallas Morning News reported on Sunday that there's an issue related to whether or not White profited from an investment that went south for, you know, by reading the article, it sounds like it was a company that did not do well, but White did well.
It didn't do well. And then when he was running for mayor in 2003, he said, "I haven't made any money on this." Then a couple years later, the company went public, and he ended up making about $1 million, I think.
Right.
So they're saying, "Oh, you lied. You did make money on that." And his campaign says, "Well, he made money after he said he hadn't made money."
Which sounds like I voted for it before I voted against it.
Well, you can't know whether you made money before you make it.
I mean, you can lose money before you start.
But you can understand. I mean, leaving aside the substance of it for a second, since after all we're journalists, you can understand how this presents.
It sets up a nice issue for the Perry people.
Right.
And then the White campaign has been coming back and saying, well, you know, all of your, you aren't releasing your stuff. A lot of Perry stuff is in a blind trust. He's been in public office for all these years, which is part of the, you know, we've released our tax returns while we're in public office. But he became a millionaire in the meantime, you know.
So our long summer continues.
Yeah, basically still just back and forth.
Can't we just have a debate? Come on.
I wonder if the white people are going to refuse to debate now until Perry releases his tax.
That would be great.
Perry releases his tax return for 1986 and 87.
Right. It's not Perry that's refusing. It's the white campaign that's refusing. We're refusing to debate him.
Right.
That's a very good impression of someone, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, Reeve, you get the final topic, the shakeup in the Senate.
Okay, well, there was a big shakeup in the Senate.
It is the final topic. Yeah.
This week, David Dewhurst announced that 8 chairmanships in the Senate were changing around. I'm not going to go through who they all are because I don't remember, and that would take a long time. But the main point
this is turned line. Into Ben Singer.
The main point is that John Corona, who was promoted transportation policies that the lieutenant governor and other Republicans were not too happy about, got removed from transportation. He goes over to business and commerce.
Which was Troy Frazier's committee.
Right.
Troy Frazier then becomes head of the Natural Resources Committee.
Which was Averitt's committee.
Vacated by Kip Averitt.
Right.
Tommy Williams had been the head of administration.
He now goes to Kevin transportation. Altife.
Tommy Williams goes to transportation. See, we remember.
And yeah, you know what I think is really notable?
I was just trying to open it up for discussion. I didn't want to take the whole topic.
Unlike Ben, we don't have notes.
Right. And you know what was really notable also was that Jeff Wentworth lost.
Well, I was getting to that, but
committee.
I got interrupted.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Jeff Wentworth also has some views that are not popular with the rest of the Republicans, got demoted and went down to a subcommittee that previously had not existed. Of course, there are all these rumors that Jeff Wentworth might be leaving to go to Texas A&M for some high-up position.
Vice chancellor job.
Although he says he's gonna run for re-election so that by winning he could set up a special election to replace him instead of an appointment.
But what is the consequence of the sum total of these changes? It is the largest shuffling of the deck at a comparable point between sessions, right, in a long time. This is it's not a regular business type move. It's a significant move on Dewhurst's part, isn't it?
I think it is on the transportation side, just because the idea of some of the local option gas taxes have been very popular, or not very popular, they've been popular with cities like Dallas and Austin.
And Corona has been out of step with his party, right?
And Corona's been pushing them. Well, so we're in a budget cut year. The only way that TxDOT could get any more money is if they raise taxes somewhere. Governor Perry and Republican leadership have already said, no, this is a no new taxes session. And yet it's going to be more popular to try and find a local option, I would guess, this local option gas tax, than to do nothing. Yeah. So, you know, by taking him out, it's like, phew, good, local option's now off the table. I mean, that doesn't mean that somebody won't file a bill, but it also means that it has to get through Tommy Williams' committee, not Corona's committee.
No, and it's an interesting switch. I mean, a good thing to sort of illustrate the differences between them are Tommy Williams sort of carried the rule change that opened the door for voter ID, and Corona was the only person to vote against it, was the only Republican to vote against it in the last session. So one is very much, you know, he will carry the mantle for whatever the party wants, and Corona will do what he thinks is best.
I've also heard Corona's staff, and through some people on Corona's staff, that they're quite happy with business and commerce. They don't mind.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, right. The other thing that happened over the last day or so was that Corona told the Dallas Morning News that he would definitely not run for mayor of Dallas next time, which was something that people, just as there's speculation about Wentworth's future, there was speculation about Corona's. Corona is going to run for re-election, not run for mayor. So this is not essentially Corona accepting a consolation prize on his way out the door, as the Wentworth deal is perceived to be. But if Corona's staff is saying that they're happy with, maybe he can make a little power base out of business and commerce the way he did out of transportation.
Right. And business and commerce has always been an important committee, especially for oil and gas companies. You know, a lot of the solar bill and all that whole debacle last session came through Frazier's committee. And so a lot of industry is very considers business and commerce to be their go-to committee. And so it's not like it's much of a demotion for Corona.
But I think it's interesting that both in the case of transportation and natural resources, a more moderate chairman has been replaced by a more conservative chairman. Because there's no question that Averitt was more moderate on the question of natural resources than Frazier.
But he was Averitt also started Texas's own Cash for Clunkers program before we had a chance to hate the federal one.
With Averitt, there's also the issue of a lot of the members of the Senate might have expected David Sibley to be replacing Averitt, which would have brought in a more experienced legislator. Instead, they have a new guy in Brian Birdwell who is not ready. You know, you have to move him around. He can't be the chairman of natural resources just coming in fresh off the whatever. Whatever he's not coming off.
Turnip truck? What are you trying to go for here?
All right. Well, we hope you've enjoyed Evan's first podcast back in
a
couple
of weeks.
Not
sure that Evan did, but anyway.
We'll be back next week. And on behalf of Evan, Ben, and Reeve, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.